There are natural life cycles in life, life and death, new beginnings. I think we particularly see it in plants and in trees, things that grow from the earth. We're particularly aware of that, the birth, growth, aging, dying, and rebirth as the seed that is produced by the tree as it falls off and the fruit dies, and it then is the seedling that produces a new tree. There's a process of restoration that occurs naturally in our world. And a place that we're particularly aware of that, living in Washington, is with Mount St. Helens. For those of you that were living in Washington at the time, you were closer even than I was. I was living in Portland to the big blast, but yet for all of us in the Northwest to recognize that it blew and there was incredible devastation as the trees were mowed down and everything was covered with ash and the destruction down the rivers. And yet today there is life on Mount St. Helens. There is life that has risen out of the ash. There are plants that are growing. There are animals that have returned. There is life where there was death and destruction. Another place is in the Elwha River, where there was a dam that blocked the Elwha River and created a large lake, and they determined that they should remove that dam, and that left behind where all the water was, left behind this muddy muck and that dried out, and again was this dead place. And yet life has come back and things are growing and there is new life. It is a natural part of what God does on this earth to bring new life where there is death and devastation. It also occurs every spring as the world turns green and springs to life. I love the spring because to see the flowers popping up and to see the new growth on the trees, that fresh new green growth on an evergreen, on a fir tree, is so pretty and is so vibrant and full of life. It's soft and just, I love to see that occur. As the dead of winter gives way, a new life emerges. It is pretty wonderful to see all those places where life comes in new ways. We like it best, particularly I think as Americans, when there's a constant surge of growth. We're, as Americans, drawn to the growth model, bigger and better, forward and onward, new and more. And when things begin to wane, we get nervous. When the bigger and better model doesn't keep on keeping on in a way that we expect, we often get nervous and fret that something is wrong. Rather than see it as a natural life cycle and look for how God is at work, we want to fix it so that we can get back to the bigger and better, so that we can always be growing, always be moving on to a new place. We ask the questions, how do we pump new life into something? How do we muster up the new energy to get whatever it is that's waning back to the kind of life that we have grown accustomed to? Often we struggle with endings. Rather than being aware, again, that they're a natural part of the rhythms of life, we prefer beginnings over endings. And I've often said one of the things we don't know how to do is how to end things well. I think that's true organizationally. I think that's true in our individual lives. We prefer endings or beginnings over endings to the point that we even sometimes rush the beginnings, moving quickly from the new thing without finishing the old thing well. I see that in job endings. One friend simply didn't show up the last week of work. So I'm out of here. I'm done. It's over. I'm gone. I'm not coming. Not finishing while I'm on. There are others that, and I tend to be one of these, that stay a little too long and try to wrap up everything neat and tidy rather than recognizing that I'm human and I can't always wrap everything up neat and tidy. Most of us end a job on Friday and begin a new one on Monday. And rarely do we give ourselves downtime. It's major to transition to a new job. And rarely do we give ourselves the grace and permission to celebrate a job completed, a career completed, or whatever it is that we have completed, and take time to be in between before we begin the new. We actually do better at beginning the new if we take time in between. If we settle into this place and let the old end and end well. And then just are in this place of in between before we move in to what is coming ahead. With hard things, we're tempted to bolt and run rather than stay present with what is happening. When it gets difficult, we want out of there. We want to jump ship rather than deal with whatever is difficult in our lives and work it through, tend to it, figure out how to be present to that difficult place in our lives. Transitions are difficult. Even when we're transitioning to something good, there's a reality that transitions of any sort take a toll on us. And to be aware of that, to recognize that transitions aren't something that we just blast through and it's the same yesterday as it is today. They are hard work, and they take hard work for us to move from one place to a new place. They're best when we end well and don't rush the new beginning, when we really embrace this in-between time, this downtime, when we see the dips less as failure and as a time to notice what is happening, notice what is going on. What is this transition to when we notice dips happening in life, when things begin to wane, to ask where we are and what's happening and what should I notice along the way rather than just rush on to fix it and create something new to take its place and bolt to the next place. To find out that God is just as present here as when there's obvious growth, as when the bigger and better is happening, that God is always present with us no matter what. I often think of transitions as being in the fog. Like crossing a bridge on a foggy night. The Astoria Bridge crosses the Columbia near the mouth of the river where it dumps into the ocean. And that bridge is 4.1 miles long. That's a long bridge to drive across in a lovely, good weather day. You wonder how far it is to the other side. But on a foggy night, it's weird. It feels really strange. You can't see the other side. You can't see where you're going to land. And part of the bridge goes up high. And it's up high so that the big ships can sail underneath because this is a major port. And ships come all the way into Portland. So it's got to be high so that the ships can go underneath. So you feel like you're driving up into this abyss. You have to trust the bridge. And you have to trust the Department of Transportation that if it was closed, they would put a sign out and they would tell us so that we wouldn't get stuck. You have to keep driving. And we do come to solid land. But just like we don't like driving 4.1 miles across a bridge in the fog, we don't like it in life. We don't like these foggy places in life. We don't like it when life seems stalled in the in-between places, when we're not sure what's happening. Everything in me wants to get through it quickly. Some bolt and leave. I'm out of here. I am not sticking around to find out what's going to happen. I'm gone. Others try to fix it. Americans are great fix-it people. Sometimes that works to our advantage in that we're creative and have good ideas. But sometimes we do it to our detriment, where we're so focused on we have to fix it, we have to right it, that we can't even notice what is happening. We can't see what is going on and see where God might be present in the middle of this place. Others are waiting to see if the new beginning is one that I want to be a part of. I'll let them figure it out. I'll stand back over here. When you get it figured out, I'll decide if I want to join you or not. But like driving 4.1 miles across a bridge in the fog, I must stay in this present moment. Most of us don't have helicopters at hand so that we can order an airlift across. The only way to get across that bridge is to drive across it. And that's one wheel turn after another wheel turn after another wheel turn. We have to stay focused on what's in front of us, on the white dotted line that goes down the road. And if it's really foggy, you look really close at that white dotted line. And we drive slowly. If there's cars ahead of us, we watch those lights of the cars ahead of us. In life, we need to focus on Jesus, to slow down and hold on. I ask Jesus, what is next? What do you want to show me in this place? And then listen. Rather than jump ahead to the muster it up or simply leave, to slow down and listen, hold on, and ask Jesus to show us, usually what the next step is, a little bit at a time. There is life here. It just feels more obscure. It's harder to see. But to recognize that there's life in the middle of the fog. As a church, we're in a time of transition. It's a natural time of change. We keenly feel the loss of those that are moving on, particularly those that are retired and are moving to a new place where they can end well their life. And we recognize that they've made good decisions to end well this life in a place that will care for them and tend to their needs. And yet we're aware that there is a shift here in Seattle. Their good choices impact us. Attendance is down. Finances are down. There's a loss of skills that those individuals brought. A loss of someone to do the particular duty that that person carried. When Ernie left, I had to asked several people to pick up various pieces of Ernie's job, because Ernie was the kind of guy that sat at the back and kind of did all the odds and ends and would tend to whatever. Even as he was getting older and less able to be present, he still was attentive as he could be. One person, actually Stephanie, said to me, "The church is dying." When she heard that Ernie was leaving, she was distraught. And she said, "The church is dying." And maybe you felt that way. I said to her, "I don't think it's dying. I think God is remaking us. God is recreating us and doing something new and different. I think we're in the midst of a natural life cycle change, a natural downtime. And the mistake would be to rush in and somehow start a whole bunch of new programs because that's going to fix it, or quick like change pastors, maybe I'm what's wrong with it, or quick like get new pews, all the pews are the problem, we'll just get rid of them and get chairs, you know, I mean, whatever. I'm being a little bit crazy on purpose. But sometimes there's a temptation to say, we just need to fill in the blank, and that will take care of it. Then we'll grow. But I think God is at work, and new life is happening among us. I'm aware of growth among you, of how God is present in our lives collectively, how God's stories are deep and rich and continue, and how God is working through all of us. And I love that sometimes they're itty-bitty stories like some brand new blueberries and the promise of life. And sometimes they're a huge one like a gift of $1,000 that blows our socks off. But God is present. And God is here working through us. God is remaking us. And the old must give way to the new. To new life. It is a time of transition, a time of shifting. Nowhere is that felt more keenly than with this building. Our property is kind of overgrown, and I'm aware when I talk with Martha about what to prune and what not to prune and how to manage the grounds around here, that we have a lot of property, and it would actually be better if we could kind of start over with some of it and replant, because it's hard to always be fixing what is beyond, has kind of lived out its natural life cycle. The school wants to buy our building, but we haven't found a place to go. So with this building, that leaves us in a quandary, wondering what do we do and what do we just let be? Because we're going to move. And we recognize that that was an incredible miracle, that a school would come and say, we want to buy your building and we're willing to pay a premium price in order to purchase this place. We're willing to relocate you to something new and different. And we're willing to pay more than the real estate folks say it's worth. That is a miracle. And we're trusting that. We've said yes. But God has not yet shown us where the yes will be. We believe it's there, but we don't know where, and so we wait. And so we wait. As a congregation, I think that we've come to a place where we can't just assume that the past, whatever the past is and whoever has always done it in the past, will simply carry us forward. We're in a place of transition, and we need to stop and notice, to name the truth that this is a new place, and that sometimes it feels awkward. It feels more uncomfortable. We're in a foggy place of in-between, and we don't know what the future will look like. We react to that in multiple ways. Some of us are tempted to pull back and wait and see what they do. Some of us are tempted to leave and go somewhere else. Some of us come up with fixes. If we would just do this, we would grow. Some of us lose hope and lose heart and shift into plodding gear. Just do what I gotta do to get through the next day, the next week, year, whatever it is. Some of us ignore the whole thing. But I think this is a time in which we are called to pull together, not apart. It's an all hands on deck time. It's a time to work together, to recognize the truth that we're in a transition. And it's a time to lock arms and stand together, to work for the good of the whole, that we all show up for church and maybe even come a little early to say, there's life here. We're here. To leave the class a little early and come over and gather over here so that as new folks come, it doesn't feel so empty. To have a sense in which we're together and notice what's going on and we're not giving up. We're working together. A time to declare that God is not finished with us yet. God is not finished with us yet. I remember a chorus that I learned a long time ago that says, God did not take us out this far to take us back again. The idea being that when the Israelites left Egypt and were out in the desert, wandering around on their way to the promised land, it was a long time in the desert, and that God didn't take us out this far to take us back to Egypt to be slaves again. That God is at work here, but we must keep going, and we must keep going together. God is present with us and does have a future for us, but we need to stay present to that future, to notice what God is doing. To be in the present moment, to pull together and find a way forward one step at a time, to celebrate the itty bitty steps, to celebrate the places where we see a little movement, to celebrate the reality that God is present, and then that in and of itself is enough. To stay in this present moment as long as it takes without rushing it. To stay in this moment as long as it takes without rushing it. Our temptation is to put the pressure on Beth, hurry up. That's not the answer. Beth is looking hard and doing the good work. We, as a community, must stay in this present moment as long as it takes and trust God to lead us and to be faithful. The reason that we need to stay in this present moment as long as it takes is so that we can do the full work that is ours to do in this place. And I can't really describe all of that because I think it's an unfolding work. We do this next step, and then the next step, and the next step. It's easy for us sometimes, if you're standing on one rim of the Grand Canyon, you see the other rim and you say, I want over there. But you know how you get to the other side of the Grand Canyon? You drive around if you're not able to walk. If you don't drive around, you go down the bottom and back up the other side. Unless you have a helicopter, which I don't. You can't just be there. There's no way through but through. So to stay present and do the work that is ours to do in this place, but to discover it together, to be present to one another, to tend to the truth of who God is and what God is doing, to notice and tend to the tender new shoots of life as they show themselves, to water them, to put some fertilizer on, to be present with them, tend what God is doing here, to encourage each other and pray for each other. What we do in this time of transition will determine how we move forward with the new. God is present. We have work to do. To be present to this moment, to this time of transition. I'm going to read two passages of Scripture in conclusion. They're both from the Message Bible, and I've chosen that on purpose because I like the way they say it. And they have something, I think, to say to us in this time of transition. The first is from the end of Matthew 6. If God gives such attention to the appearance of wildflowers, most of which are never even seen, don't you think God will attend to you, take pride in you, do His best for you? What I'm trying to do here is to get you to relax, to not be so preoccupied with getting, so you can respond to God's giving. People who don't know God and the way God works fuss over these things. But you know both God and how God works. Steep yourself in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. Don't worry about missing out. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Give your entire attention to what God is doing right now, and don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. The other passage is the end of 1 Corinthians 13. We often know this as the love chapter. But I particularly like this ending from the Message Bible. We don't see things clearly. We're squinting in a fog, peering through a mist. But it won't be long before the weather clears and the sun shines bright. We'll see it all then. See it all as clearly as God sees us, knowing God directly, just as God knows us. But for right now, until that completeness, we have three things to do to lead us toward that consummation. Trust steadily in God. Hope unswervingly. Love extravagantly. And the best of the three is love. Go after a life of love as if your life depended on it. Because it does. Let's listen as we wait in open worship to God who is present and whom we invite to speak directly to us. And if you receive a message, we invite you to raise your hand so that Becky can bring your microphone, because we as a community need to hear God's collective message for us. Let us listen and let us be faithful.